got a 50-year-old man in cardiac arrest, and our building just lost power.
All right, give me jumper cables, rubber gloves, 3,000 grams of Solmedrol. Stat.
What are you, MacGyver?
No, I'm the Generalist.
This month on The Generalist, we wanted to tackle contraception, and specifically two different aspects of contraception, namely long-acting contraceptives, or LOCs, as well as different methods of emergency contraception. Now, we recognize that availability of these contraceptives might vary from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, but hopefully these overviews will give everyone a good grounding in these basics. Now, we decided to split this section into two parts, with the LOCs coming first. So let's jump right in and join Ben Shepherd as he introduces the guest expert as they take on that first topic of the long-acting contraceptives.
This month, we've got Penny Wilson. Penny's an Australian like me, but is currently working in Canada. Now, she's actually the perfect person to have on this show because she is, in fact, a generalist. She's a general practitioner and a GP obstetrician trained in Australia who's worked in clinics, in hospitals, in large places, small places. She really understands the message we're trying to send on The Generalist. And thanks, Penny. I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be back.
Let's talk about LARCs. Tell me what a LARC is, and then I'll let you just give us all the knowledge that you have.
So LARC, L-A-R-C, stands for Long-Acting Reversible Contraception. So it encapsulates a few different methods, the most common one being the IUD, or the intrauterine device. And there's a couple of different types of those as well. So there's a copper IUD, which works by inhibiting fertilization by being toxic to sperm. And then there's a hormonal IUD containing levonorgestrel. And there's a few different brands of these with different doses, but they are Marina, Skylar, Kylena, and Jadess are the common ones. And how these work is they have a few different modes of action, but they thicken the cervical mucus to inhibit the sperm motility. They can cause some atrophy of the endometrial lining, and they sometimes but not always inhibit ovulation. Now, another type of LARC is a etonorgestrel subdermal implant, so it's also a type of progestogen, and those are called Nexplanon or Implanon, depending on which country you're in. And they work a bit like the hormonal IUD, but they have more inhibition of ovulation.
How do you view these long-acting contraceptive options? Do you think they've got a really big role in healthcare or a small role? Tell me what your practice and your opinions on them are.
Yeah, I think that they should have a bigger role than they do, actually, Ben. And really, the ACOG, so the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, has been recommending LARCs as the first-line contraceptive option for everyone, including adolescents, for over a decade. But there are some contraindications that we'll get to, but for most folks, there is a LARC to suit them.
What do you think the barriers are to patients having a greater adoption of these methods?
There are a lot of reasons why this is the case. In the 70s, the early forms of IUDs caused problems with PID and tubal infertility. And, you know, modern IUDs are not associated with these risks, but I think some of the fear kind of permeates through the generations, and there's still a bit of a misunderstanding around there. And, you know, it's also a bit about cultural expectations and patient preferences and access to people who can insert the devices. You know, people want to take what their family members and their friends are taking. So it kind of is a bit of a vicious cycle in terms of trying to get more people using it. And of course, the other thing is health provider attitudes, which hopefully we can change with our podcast today.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's get everyone on board. So, all right, sell me the LARC. Tell me why we should use them more often.
The reason that we've already alluded to is that you insert them and then they work in the background and you don't have to remember to take them. And so the perfect use and the real world use for the LARC forms of contraception are almost the same. Now, if you compare that to like a combined oral contraceptive pill, an estimated 9% of patients will have an unintended pregnancy in their first year, compared to well below 1% for the LARC methods. And that's because people don't take it perfectly. There's been one British study which estimated that if 5% of women switched from the pill to a LARC, there would be 7,500 fewer unintended pregnancies each year, which I just find mind-blowing.
Those numbers are incredible. What do you see the downsides? Is there a trade-off with LARCs? They, you know, clearly there's some big benefits. What are some of the downsides?
You know, there aren't that many downsides, I've got to say. The main side effects that people have are bleeding problems. So heavy or painful bleeding is the highest risk with copper IUDs. It tends to settle down within the first few months for a lot of people. The subdermal implant, some people can have heavy or frequent periods. Some people can have light or no periods, but irregular bleeding is fairly common. And with the levonorgestrel IUD, most people have no bleeding or very light bleeding. So that's a real benefit of that.
What's your advice to a woman who comes to see you and says, I have a levonorgestrel IUD, I'm still unhappy with my bleeding pattern? Is it usually a matter of saying, let's give it another 3-6 months and see how it's going at that point? How do you typically handle that conversation?
If you're in the first couple of months, it's a pretty common experience, and you can safely tell them that it will likely settle down within 4 to 6 months. If it's a problem that isn't tolerable for the patient, then you can use another type of hormone in combination with the IUD until things settle down. So like you could use a combined oral contraceptive pill with the hormonal IUD for a few months until it settles in and see what happens. But of course, if it's a problem for people, you can just take it out and try something else.
I think it's so important to have a plan for that potential consultation. And I think just having that calm presence and having a plan of how to maybe add another agent or just be patient can really transition these women to a bleeding pattern they're far more happy with.
Yeah, I think you're totally right in that people with bad experiences are way more vocal about their experiences than people who have good experiences. People don't usually go on the internet to rave about how wonderful their IUD is. But the experience of the vast majority of people with hormonal IUDs is really, really good. I tend to tell patients a bit of an off-the-cuff comment that 9 out of 10 female doctors have a hormonal IUD, which has roughly been the case in most of the recent clinics that I've worked at.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing tends to help reassure patients that, you know, this is a method that a lot of well-informed people use and find really good.
Can I tell you an extra part of my counselling that I used to include that you haven't mentioned?
Yeah.
So I used to say very clearly, when you get this box, and I'm referring to the Mirena, I promise you it is nowhere near the size of the box.
Yeah, yeah, I tell patients that as well.
Have the boxes come down in size? Or because I used to remember they'd bring them to clinic and I thought, geez, no wonder you're so nervous about this thing. It's so much packaging. And I used to have a laugh at them and say, look, it's just full of instructions to the doctor and how to do it. All right, Penny, so should we finish off our discussion of some of the side effects of these LARCs?
Yeah, so they're generally very well tolerated, but for some people who are particularly sensitive to hormones, they can get some progestogenic type side effects. So they would be things like headaches, acne, change in libido, appetite, or weight change. And this is far more likely with the subdermal implant compared to the IUD because the amount that gets absorbed systemically is significantly higher.
Any people who can't have a particular type of long-acting reversible contraceptive?
Yep. So as always, we definitely want to encourage people to refer to the CDC Medical Eligibility Criteria, the MEC, for the full comprehensive list of risks and benefits for different patient characteristics and contraceptives. But in summary, for the IUDs, you don't want to put one in somebody who has an active uterine infection, so endometritis, purulent cervicitis, chlamydia or gonorrhea, PID, and also anyone with active cervical cancer, suspicious uterine bleeding, or major structural abnormalities of the uterus. Now, for both the hormonal IUD and the subdermal etonogestrel implant, they aren't recommended for people with concurrent or recent breast cancer or severe liver disease. But compared to other methods, the list of contraindications is pretty small. So for most people, they are A-OK to go ahead with a LARC.
So, Penny, what you're telling me is these are easier to be compliant with, they are more effective, there are less side effects, and there are less contraindications. Am I hearing the right message?
That is absolutely the right message. Now, I'm not sponsored by any of the LARC companies, but I think they're really great. I don't think we use them enough. And I think part of the reason is that we as doctors don't know enough about them or feel confident enough. So yeah, hopefully we've been able to allay some of those concerns that our listeners might have and get them recommending more LARCs for their patients.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Penny. That was a great overview of the older and newer LARC options. So read up on them, listen to the segment again, and be prepared to field your patients' questions. Now we're going to take a quick break so your brain can lay down all that information. And then a little later in the show, we're going to rejoin Ben and Penny to tackle the topic of emergency contraceptive options.